Good morning.
Good morning.
All our members and our children of the detachment. I think everybody's like very full of energy. And normally towards the end of the year people are tired, the way they said, but I wonder what is different. Maybe you know something.
No.
Is it my own? Everybody is full of energy. What's happening? But everybody was just on a lighter note. So, members, maybe before we start, I should just request that for today we've got two agenda items. Well, we're going to deal with this is the first meeting. Immediately after that, we're going to have our annual report for the presentation. I'm going to request advocate in the delegation, if you make him put that into consideration, that is for another meeting immediately after this one, because this one is just a greeting and we'll be taking clearances. But I just want to emphasize that before two items for this thing. On that note, honorable members, let's just introduce ourselves and go straight to the business of the day, which is the briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training on Higher Education Laws Amendment Bill. I've seen the abbreviation HETA. You know, there's so many HETA, we tell you something. Oh, we are going to get on to that. Let's start from that side, honorable members.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Zavalias, and I'm representing the Western Cape. Thank you.
That's our chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lady Ashodi from the Free State Province.
Hello, Chani. I'm Akuma Roto, representing the province of the Right Child.
Good morning. This is Bindi. We are representing the province of the Children.
I'm Wendy Makata, the chairperson of the Select Committee from the North and the province that produces champions and send them to Gauteng.
That one is the reality.
Thanks. My name is Gwes Konde from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, I'm Gina Ume from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
I'm Ivan Bosov, Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, Mariana Erasmus, Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning. I'm not to learn about the PO from the Office of the National Education and Training.
Good morning. My name is Kumura from the Office of the Director General of the Department of Education.
I'm Kathleen from PMG.
Honorable members, I must also indicate that we don't have a researcher. Our researcher has been appointed as a senior researcher now. for now, the committee is without a session.
The legal advisor for Parliament is out of the country. The region board from legal services is going to take notes with everything that is decided here. And the community will respond in writing and to committee with everything that needs to be done.
Let me give to the department to brief us on the field.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. We really welcome this opportunity, and I'll ask Advocate Boshoff to take us through the presentation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Chair, before we continue, please. We didn't get any apologies, and I don't see the political heads here.
Can we do the apologies?
I will note the apologies from the committee. Honorable Admin, I've not received the apology from the committee. The Deputy Minister is out of the country at the present moment, and there is a cabinet which is sitting. So the Minister is in there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Once we accept what the DG is saying, but I think to show respect to the committee, then there is a need for apologies, written apologies to the President that will be read here.
Thanks, Honorable Gorbachev. DG, you know that every time we submit certain reports, I think we should say in answer to that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you've indicated that there's limited time. I'm not sure if the this meeting is scheduled till 11 o'clock, if the two items is all within that time slot, or do we have time for up until 11 o'clock to deal with this item?
We've got 1 hour, and then from 11 to 1 is
the another. 100%. We provide quite an elaborate set of slides. I'm not going to run through all of them due to the time constraint. Chair, what is important is that the Higher Education and Training Laws Amendment Bill, it is Bill 23B of 2012. This bill basically deals with four issues. The first one is to deal afresh with the concept of the National Institute for Higher Education. The second important aspect that's been dealt with is the extension of powers to an independent assessor. The fourth issue that's been dealt with is to deal with the appointment of an administrator that takes temporary the responsibility of governance and management within the institution. It is also important that that provision is also applicable when it comes to the National Institute for Higher Education. So members might see similar provisions in different places in the bill. And then lastly, these are all amendments to the University or the Higher Education Act, applicable to university education, and then this general amendment legislation also addressed an amendment to the National Qualifications Framework Act, where a technical amendment has been included in this bill to deal with the reporting time frame and to bring it in line with the PFMA. I'm not going to spend too much time on the process. It went through the whole procedure. It was approved by the state law advisors and was certified by Sable Advisors, and it was tabled in Parliament by the 1st of June as per prescripts of Parliament. So the first clause of this bill is dealing with an amendment to Section 27 of the Education Act, which is dealing with members of council and the eligibility to be a member. And it is also linked to the amendments to the appointment of the independent assessor and the administrator, and that is dealing with implications for persons identified in those reports that caused that administration to be effected. The next issue is the is dealt with in clause 2. These are dealing with the theme, the first theme of dealing with the National Institutes for Higher Education. Now, currently there are two. There are one for Mpumalanga and there is one for the Northern Cape, which is a very interesting phenomenon in any national piece of legislation, because national legislation must address the country as a whole and not specific provinces. So in order to address that anomaly, the intention is to provide a new framework where the focus is not a province, but rather on the scope and application. That is important, and with higher education as a very diverse area and field of education and qualifications, the need is to have more than one focus. And therefore the approach is not to provide for a single institute, but to provide according to the need. If it is on humanities, if it is on maths and science, whatever the need, this is the framework within which the minister can then determine the appointment, the establishment of such an institute. The minister must clearly identify in the regulations the scope and application, and the minister will also provide within the basic functions that's provided in the Act, also additional functions which is necessary for that specific institute to function within that scope and application. The regulations, which is very critical in the establishment, is basically a follow through from the existing provisions in the Act, where the existing two institutes were also established on a similar approach, where the functions has also been provided for by way of regulations. Clause 3 is dealing with the basic provisions pertaining to the functions, and as indicated, the regulations which the minister will prescribe additional functions which will be more tailor-made for that specific institute and the scope and application field within which that institute will operate. So, clause 4 is dealing with the criteria of the membership. It requires that the members must have specific knowledge of higher education generally, and what is important is scope and application, which is that knowledge that is specific to that scope and application, is also a requirement, and the minister will also have regulations to identify any other criteria that is needed in order to make nominations. These clauses also provide for the size and the of such a board within which the institute will operate. It is not contained in the amendment bill, as it is already in the original bill, in the original act. But here the two must be read in conjunction, because there are other sections already in the act which is also applicable. So it is not that it is not covered by this amendment. So, clause 5 is dealing with the reporting. It is an amendment to the current position. It is dealing with a section that is also currently in the Act, and it is just to provide more substance to it, where the audit must be with, provided within the 3 months time frame as set by the PMA, and Chair, it also deals with the report, which includes the statements of the preceding financial year, and it also deals with specific topics within which the report will be modeled, and where a specific announcement may be made on the financial state of affairs. It must represent the business, the financial results and financial position, the performance, and it must contain the audit committee's report and any other information that may be prescribed. So, clause 7 is providing three different clauses of a new section. The first one is that it is within the theme of appointing an administrator. This is the need to look at alternatives to the appointment. And this is an intervention where the minister provides directives to the institutions, the higher education institutions, the universities, to correct a specific problem within the criteria specified in that section. And here it is providing a directive within a specific time frame, and the institution must deal with it. If they fail to deal with it, it will also have the sanction of an administrator that must be appointed, and that council will be abolished. Chair, it is important that, this is relating to the institute, the board. It affects the board's responses to it, and it, as I've already indicated to you, very similar to what we will see later on in section 49, capital B. But the intention is to just provide more flexibility, that you don't necessarily always go for the most extreme, but provide a structured intervention by the minister, where the minister can provide directives. It is based on a similar approach that you would find in terms of your PFMA, where financial mismanagement must also be addressed within the reports, and where directives must be given. Chair, it is to do with it. And the board, if they fail to do it, there is a consequence that they must be, that the board will be dissolved, and that the administrator will be appointed. Here, it is further very important that the normal approach of an appointment that of an administrator, which is based on a report or an audit, which indicate serious maladministration, and which also affect seriously and undermines, is the word used in the or in the bill, the effective functioning of the National Institute, that remains a very important criteria for the minister to deal with a dysfunctional board. It also make it clear that when the minister deals with this criteria, and it's this three criteria basically, it is the financial records, the audits that shows this malfunctioning, the the other circumstances that reveal the serious nature that undermines the effectiveness, or if the board itself requests the minister to place him under administration. And the minister will then appoint the administrator. The administrator will be there for a period of 2 years. Chair, the time frame is a time frame that has been used over a number of education legislation, and it is a time frame which is linked to a reasonable period that enables that person also, that appointed as an administrator, also to reconstitute within the processes that's needed within that constitution of the board to get a new board in place so that that institute can continue with its function as provided for in the legislation. Chair, it also provides for assistance because the intervention of an administrator to deal with governance and management, it's quite a diverse field of expertise that's required. The will provide for that, that additional persons can be appointed by that administrator with the approval of the minister, and that it also deals with the remuneration which is prescribed in in consultation with the Minister of Finance. It deals with the consequence of an administration that the board will be dissolved because you can't have two heads on the same body. And it means that if there's an administration, a new board must be reconstituted in order to deal with the time frame of the administration. And then it also deals with a vacant actual position which is not covered by the current legislation, and that is the current legislation provides for the establishment of a national institute, but there is no provision to close it down, and this also is a to address that anomaly, and therefore make sure that if there is no need for such an institute in the future, that the minister can close it down, but the principles of natural justice must be adhered. It makes it very clear, therefore those being affected by the decision must get an opportunity to state why this is not the best option, and the minister can only take that decision if there is a good rationale, a reason to justify such a decision. Chair, the next clause is just repealing the current position which is applicable to the administrator of universities, higher education institutions, and it is moved to a place in the Act which is just following the appointment of the independent assessor. And therefore it is more of a structural nature. The same provisions is used when we deal with section 49 capital C later on. Clause 9 is a very important one, and it is dealing with the concept of an independent assessor, which is a current provision. But the notion of an independent assessor has been to come from the higher education community, and based on the respect and the knowledge of that person, that person will then do an investigation and provide an outcome, a report with recommendations which the minister then used to appoint an administrator. So it has been found that the powers that such a person needs to do a proper investigation, to identify the evidence, the substantive evidence needed to make a proper sound recommendation with reasons substantiated by facts, is lacking at the moment. And this is the provision to, first of all, provide that person with the that need be appointed with the knowledge and the merits within which that investigation must be conducted. It will still be a person that is nominated or identified from a list that's provided by the CHE. So it's nominated or it's persons that's been listed on that on as independent assessors, as suitable investigators, and the minister must still use only those names in order to appoint. But when that person is appointed, that person can investigate, that person can copy the documents, the relevant documents applicable to the matter and the investigation. That person can decide if specific persons or categories of persons who may negatively impact on the investigation can be temporarily excluded in order to get to the heart of the problem. That person can further also put a person with that provides documentation can be prohibited from disclosing it unless there is specific approval by the independent assessor. The independent assessor can also require specific persons to make affidavits. So if there is no documentary proof to that allegation and that person is reluctant or refused to make an affidavit, this is now a statutory provision for the independent assessor to get that evidence by way of an affidavit, and it also provides that the independent assessor and obviously you will also get assistance in order to deal with the investigation under his authority, also reasonably expect that the information that is very relevant, that person must provide that information. It also can provide a directive that that person must appear and perform and provide also the authority that person will get a proper notification. And that person is obliged to provide that evidence and also the documentation. It also provides the authority to place that person under oath. And it is also important that it gives that investigation the opportunity that if there is any negative findings and recommendations, that investigator must afford those people affected by it an opportunity, in other words, comply with the rules of natural justice, in order to get a balanced position and put the minister in a position where the minister can act on the findings and recommendations as it is encompassing all relevant information that is needed in order to take an informed decision. And then, Chair, it also provides the power to go into any of the buildings of the university and to copy any of the documents on those premises. Chair, this is a much more involved process of investigation which can provide an outcome which is inclusive of all relevant factors. So, Clause 10 is dealing with the report and the findings of the independent assessor, and it is just supplementing the current Section 47 of the Act by not only requiring the findings and the recommendations, but also with an obligation on the independent assessor to provide reasons for the finding on which this recommendation is based, and also suggest appropriate measures and the reasons why that measure is needed. Clause 11 is dealing with the intervention, and I've already dealt with this approach of a directive in order to not necessarily always go to an administration or the appointment of an administrator, but rather to first give at council an opportunity to rectify the problem, to deal with it within the time frame, and to ensure that there is a positive outcome to the issues. Chair, it is also important that the principles that you would find in this new provision, which is contained in section 49B, capital B, Chair, that position, the circumstances is also linking to financial impropriety, but it also deals with non-compliance to legislation. It also obstructing specific persons who've got a duty to perform in terms of the act. So if the minister or a person appointed by the minister to monitor a specific aspect, that person cannot just be locked out on the basis of autonomy, and the minister can give a directive to say this person must be admitted and must be allowed to perform its function. If you fail to do it, council, there's consequences to it. The important thing, once again, this whole measure is linked to the promotion of administrative justice acts, where there must be communication, where there is an opportunity given to the institution to say why this directive should not be dealt with, or to provide them with the opportunity to rectify it, and then if they fail to deal with it, it is a consequence of law that council will be dissolved and that an administrator will be appointed. The appointment of the administrator, this is the provisions that have been in the old section 41 capital A, which I referred earlier on, that has been moved on. It is once again linked to the financial reports and the circumstances that undermine, of maladministration that undermine the effective functioning of these universities. And it is important that when that decision is taken, the minister appoints an administrator. The administrator must get assistance because of the variety and of functions and expertise that's required to run such a huge organization as a university. Also deals with the remuneration, the allowances, and the dissolution of the council. Clauses 12 and 13 is dealing with the 12 is dealing with the technical amendment to the MQF Act, where SAQA's annual report must be submitted on or before the 31st of August each year, which is the 3 months that's provided by the PFMA. And then clause 13 is dealing with the short title of the amendment. Chair, thank you. That is basically the scope of this amendment bill.
Thank you, Advocate. Honourable members, I'm just going to give over to you for clarity between questions and questions. Honourable members, Honourable Mohoto, Moshoji, and Honourable Julius. Are you okay? Meran. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson,
the bill says, or the act says, the minister establishes the institute in Long Cape and Mpumalanga. Maybe at that time of the writing of the High Education Act, it was because of they didn't have the university. Now I want to find out what makes this bill to think about establishing institute in other provinces where universities are existing. And you have been using, to my understanding or to what I had, to say the board. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not sure that board and the council is one thing, because at the end it's disestablishment of the council. Now one doesn't understand where is the board and where is the council. I knew it before, but now it confuses me if you use it interchangeably or using one word in different, I don't know. And then I see that in the collaboration coordination, but what is exactly is aimed at establishing the institute in the other seven provinces?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me go straight to the appointment of the administrator. One, the administrator is given 2 years. And my understanding is that this is an intervention. What is the rationale behind the 2 years? Because there should be constant monitoring. What if the problems are resolved before then? What happens? Because he shall have satisfied the scope that he has been given. The other one, there is dissolution of the board. It says here on the bill, the board is dissolved from the date on which the minister appoints the administrator. Is the board not having a particular period on which to serve in this institution? Why is it dissolved? I don't understand the dissolving of the board because there is an administrator. Why does it have to stop to exist when we have an administrator? There is an independent assessor and there is an administrator. At what point do we have an independent assessor vis-a-vis the administrator? What is the relationship? At what point? Do they work at the same time or what's happening? Appointment of administrator. There's 38K, there is 49B. They both talk to the appointment of the administrator. What is the difference between what is given in 38A and what is given in 49B? When does what happen or apply? So now, thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I've got only 2 questions for now, Honorable Chair. My first question will be, in brief, tell us why do we need the National Institute of Higher Education? That is my first question. And the second question, Honorable Chairperson, will be, what are some of the challenges which the institute seeks to address? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Yes, Chairperson. I understand the numbering of the bill, the 75 and not the 76 bill. And then in relation to the institution itself, it's a national institution of higher education. And my understanding also is that in provinces there is no other institute who represents the provinces. And then in connection with the basic education laws amendment bill, where the ABET and so on and the CETAS is actually in relation to that bill is now becoming a national competence. Now my question goes around the 76, the taking of the bill to a 75 bill. Now the provinces or most of the universities, we can find them in provinces. Now can you just explain to me why eventually they decide that this bill before us must be a 75 bill and not a 76 bill? Because my understanding is that in certain cases, maybe there must be something where we must consult the provinces, the input from provinces also. Just from my understanding, so if I got that question somewhere along the line when going to the province, then I would be able to answer them in that situation. Then, Honorable Chairperson, in connection with the independent assessor, maybe there's a lack of oversight from my side. I just want to understand the word independent, because the independent assessor must not be connected to anything which can influence his work while the intervention to that institution is on the way. Maybe I can get that information. Where can I look for the definition of that independent, the word independent? I understand the assessor, but the word independent. Then, Honorable Chairperson, in relation to Section 7438J, let me just go there. Section 7.4A38J, the minister may issue that one, and then 4A. If the board fails to comply with the directive within the stated period, the minister must dissolve the board and appoint an administrator to take over the functions of the board. Now my confusion is actually going to the next one, 38K. After consultation with the board of a National Institute of Higher Education. That one. So the minister dissolved the board. Why must he consult after that with the board of must that process started before his decision of dissolving the board? Just that explanation. And then the other one is the date of the report from SAQWA. It is now shifted to the 31st of August, from the 30th of June. And I also understand the 3-month period. Now, the end of the year financial, or the financial year of all the institutions nationally is the 31st of March. And municipalities are the 30th of June. Now, this one is shifted to the 31st of August. Now, we have different dates now. Won't there be a problem specifically to SAQWA because they have now a 31st of August in term to provide their report to the minister? Why not also the same date as the departments of the 31st of March? Can I just have that explanation? Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Alright. No, thank you very much. I'll just take a few questions and the advocate is going to take, you know, others and perhaps my colleagues. At the present moment, the capacity of our universities in regard to enrollment stands around 900,000. And the biggest, which is accommodating about 3/4 of that figure, is UNISA at the present moment. The institutions that are accommodating our students on a full contact capacity
It's just about a quarter. After a thorough investigation by the department, in engagement with various stakeholders across the board, it came out that we would have to expand quite substantially the capacity of our university sector to enroll more students. And we're projecting that by 2030 at about 1.5 million. And that requires then huge expansion of the infrastructure in the city so that we could be able to absorb as many of our youth as possible. Now, it goes then without saying that you would need, as a country, to establish new universities on an ongoing basis. So the University of Mpumalanga, the University of the Northern Cape, it's not enough. Now, more universities will still going to be established. Hence then, the provision of establishing an institute as a basis towards establishing a fully-fledged university becomes quite important. That is why it's inserted there, basically. Now, why do you need a national institute? Partly I'm answering that question. Yeah, because as a basis towards establishing a fully-fledged university, you may need an institute. Why a board is dissolved when there is an administrator? The appointment of an administrator is always as a consequence and on the basis of the recommendations by an independent assessor. And the independent assessor is appointed from a list of assessors that are listed by Council for Higher Education. So when a minister wants to appoint an independent assessor, he cannot just come to Parliament or anywhere and say, no, you so-and-so come, I want you to be an independent assessor. No. It's a predetermined list of academics of high caliber and high quality that have been identified and selected by CHE. And then the minister would go to CHE and say to them, I want to appoint an independent assessor. Can you give me the names? And out of that, the minister appoints. Then the assessor would, on the basis of a failure of a council of a university to exercise its fiduciary responsibilities of governance, then go in there and investigate the allegations of maladministration that are leveled against an institution. Then upon finishing that investigation, an independent assessor would make recommendations. Some of the recommendations could be that the council has actually failed dismally, and in the view of the independent assessor, it has got no capacity to exercise its responsibilities for the benefit and interest of this institution. Therefore, there is a need for the appointment of an administrator to take over either the role of council as a governing structure or and including the management of the institution. Whichever the independent assessor is recommending in that regard. So basically, this is what the legislation is seeking to strengthen, and how then the processes would actually unfold. So advocate is going to pick up on some other areas that I have not answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very mindful of the time. Chair, the first issue that's been raised is the why then provide institutes for the other provinces. Chair, the intention is not to provide institutes for other provinces. The whole approach is to deal with it on the scope and application. As a DG indicated, if it is to deal with the establishment of The next issue that was raised was that of board versus council. So, this is an amendment act which deals with provisions that already contained, concepts that already been passed into the legislation. In terms of section 38A, the current section 38A, it provides that a national institute for education is governed by a board. It also provides in the Act, and there's many section, it's from section 27 onwards, a lot of provisions which already provide a university or a higher education institution, their governing structure is dealt with by a council. These amendments are therefore addressing those concepts that are already contained in the legislation, and therefore the amendments to section 38 capital A onwards are linked to the board of the National Institute. When you deal with the amendments relating to section 49 onwards, it deals with the council, and that is why there is a difference. Chair, the next issue that has been raised is the issue of collaboration with the other seven provinces. I think the DG also addressed that. The aspect of the question by the Honourable Member from Mpumalanga is to deal with this period of 2 years. Chair, the Act provides a period not longer than 2 years. The Minister can provide a shorter period, but the maximum 2 years. And then there is an extension of not more than 6 months. So here, the flexibility is already provided. The next issue is the dissolvement of board when an administrator being appointed. Here, you cannot have two decision-making structures at the same time. Someone must take the accountability. Someone must deal with it. The legislation says if an administrator being appointed, then that administrator take over all the functions of governance. Now, if governance is done by the administrator, what would be the function of the board or the council? And furthermore, Chair, the reason why there is an administrator is because that council or that board is dysfunctional. What would be the need to have to keep a dysfunctional structure in place? And what would that that entity do or that body do during that year? And therefore, the Act is just making it very clear that if there is that decision and that becomes effective through the notice, then as a consequence of law, no matter the time frame of the original appointment, that will then lapse, and this provision will override it, and it means from that moment the board or council is dissolved. Then, Chair, the aspect of the independent assessor and the administrator, how it interfaces with one another. It is important that the independent assessor is one was the original way of the approach in order to get to the administrator when it comes to the university sector, when it comes to the institutions itself. And as it indicated, the one is following the other. It is based on that report. it's not always that there will be an independent assessor. There can be an audit report that can also deal with it. There can be these other factors that's now been introduced in terms of section 49B, capital B, where the circumstances necessitate the minister to give directives, and the failure of that to comply, of that council to comply with it, those directives can then cause the administrator to be appointed. But if the approach is to deal with it by way of the administrator's report and function must be completed, a final report must be made, and once that report is made, then only the minister will take the decision. And then, Chair, the other issue that was raised is what is this, there's two references in 38K and 49B of the same issue. Chair, I've tried to indicate in the presentation that the intervention that's required when it comes to the malfunctioning, the dysfunctionality of governance structure is what is the issue. And therefore, when you've got separate entities, the one is the National Institute, the other one is universities, when you deal with it, you must repeat the same principle, and that is what's happening there. It is, yes, it is similar in nature, but there's also differences. For instance, you would find that the independent assessor is not applicable when it comes to the institute. But there is a reason for the independent assessor, and it is because with the university, it is affecting a huge number of students, as the DG already indicated, and it is also important that one must be sure, the minister must be sure, that that decision is founded on a solid report. The need to repeat it is therefore in order to make it applicable to the two different types of bodies that the university in terms of that. So the need for the Higher Education Institute, the question from the Free State, I think the DG already answered that one, and also how does this proposal address the need? It provides a vehicle within which the minister can then accommodate those needs.
Let me just ask you to maybe to just to respond to the issue of the taking and the issue of the accountability that the first element of each year. And I think the issue of independence is just that people want that, you know, here the issue of political interference, but I think you try to explain to that. But those two issues, can you just...
Thank you, Chair. I will definitely do that. Chair, the issue of the tagging. Chair, the provision of section 75 indicates that it is those bills that falls within the exclusive function of a national government will follow the process of section 75. The determination of how you identify that function is linked to Schedule 4 of the Constitution, and that schedule is dealing with the concurrent legislative function between the national and provincial legislature. In that schedule, it provides currently that education, excluding tertiary education. Now, tertiary education has always been defined, and in fact also the definition of higher education includes tertiary as within that framework of higher education within the context of that act, and therefore university education has always been regarded and has always been accepted as an exclusive national competence. The mere fact that the university is situated in a province means that all provinces are part of the national, and therefore somewhere along the line, there's no exclusive territory only for national. The national scope covers all the provincial scope, the different provincial scope. And therefore, the tagging of this bill is dealing with amendments to the University Act, and also therefore falling within the framework of Section 75. Then the last issue is that of the time frame for reporting in terms of the SAQWA. SAQWA is dealing with it in terms of the time frame provided by the PFMI. The end of financial year is the 31st of March. But then the financial statements must be dealt with. It's a 6-month period that we provided, and it is that period in time that's now in sync. The current wording put unnecessary pressure on SAQWA to deliver a report which is not feasible within the time frame, and therefore it is not always in the best interest of the system as a whole, because they must either break the time frame by non-compliance, which is not a good thing, because of the procedures and the time needed by auditors to go in and do a proper audit. And therefore, it was a request from them to comply with the requirements and to be in line with all the other statutory bodies. Thank you, Chair. I think those are the questions.
Thank you, Advocate. I'm also going to request that you provide us the responses in writing so that we can have more time to go through them, so that when we prepare for the finalization of the bill, when we deal with the bill, when we finalize it. I'm just thinking that we are under pressure, even though maybe there should be a follow-up question, we won't be able to do that.
The Parliamentary Monitoring Group is providing a good record of this meeting. You're not wanting to have that again. Is there any other vote that has not been answered by us?
This is what I'm requesting just to do, because even in the previous we once requested that, and you provided us with that information. And it really
affected. No, we will do that. I just want to understand this properly.
No, it's just that this is something that we have done in the past, and it really assisted us. Honourable members, Honourable Hoto, we are behind and we're going to deal with the annual report.
Chairperson, I must express my unsatisfaction when we have to deal with a bill and we're being told that we are under pressure. We need to interact on the bill and understand the bill. Like when you said he shouldn't answer certain questions. When we are having this meeting, then I don't understand why we are doing that. Because this is a meeting where they brief us on the bill, and we need to understand. Some of us are not very good with legals and drafting, but we need to understand, and this is our chance to ask questions. Maybe there was a mistake in putting the two meetings together, but we feel intimidated even to continue. Note that. Maybe what my follow-up will be, maybe I have a problem in understanding the role of council and board, unless to answer shortly you can say we don't have them in the same institution. Is that?
That's exactly.
Okay. Now, if they are not in the same institution, then my next question would be just in short, tell us where does the council apply and where does the board apply.
Thank you, honourable members. I think that this is not for the first time that we deliberate or deal with the passing of the bill. We know that the second process, which is next week, will be having more time to deliberate on the issue. That is why we have this process. The first process will have an opportunity where the department will come and brief, so that when we go and study the bill for the next presentation, when we interact, we have more questions or more clarity-seeking questions. This is not for the first time that this is happening. And also I must indicate that Some of the issues are beyond our control. The programming committee says they are aware of this, and some of our members are part of that programming. So for next week, it will be only this item for the day because it needs more interaction. Let me just take this opportunity to thank the department and honorable members. I'm worried about time, honorable, and we'll deal with that. Or advocate, I'm going to request that you know that because next week we'll be having more time, we'll be dealing with the bill.
Thank you.